It's Bill, it's Wendy, and it's 720 WGN. And on the line with us right now, Kent Hartman, best-selling author of Goodnight LA and his previous book, The Wrecking Crew. Kent, how are you doing today?
Oh, fine, thank you.
All right, the book is available. Listen, I love classic rock and roll, and I have often said that rock and roll is dead, and I have to do everything in my power to save it. What can I do?
Buy lots of CDs and videos and go in a dark room and play them.
Bob Seger was just in town, and he had done an interview saying that, you know, no one's making money off the CDs anymore. It's all about the touring. That's how they're doing it. But back in the day, that's how they did it. They made records. And we don't have the book, but I'd like to know about some of the recording sessions. You said most recently you had a story about the late, great Tom Petty.
Right. So the book runs from the early 70s up through the early 80s, which is kind of what everybody considers to be the classic rock era. And so I've got an entire chapter about Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. And, you know, Tom was a very principled guy, and there's a really good story in there about the recording of his famous album, Damn the Torpedoes. Do you remember that one?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and so, but Tom had been grandfathered into MCA Records. They had absorbed this smaller label he was on called Shelter, and so Tom felt his deal with Shelter was, you know, an unfair deal, if not illegal, and he wanted to renegotiate with MCA, which they wouldn't do. So Tom filed bankruptcy, which freaked out the record label. And so then they froze the recording funds for Damn the Torpedoes. But Tom was in the middle of recording this thing, and it was going to be his magnum opus, his breakthrough album. And so he and his manager funded the recording of it themselves out of their own pockets. And so what they would do in the middle of the night, or in the like 6 in the morning after they'd recorded all night, they would actually take the 2-inch tapes off the recording machines and put them in Tom's assistant's car trunk, and that guy would drive off to an undisclosed location and hide those tapes so that the record label couldn't get their mitts on them.
That is crazy. And that, of course, the album that gave us, like, Refugee, Here Comes My Girl. My God, don't do me like that.
Yeah. So isn't that ironic? You know, you think of Refugee. Well, it really was a refugee riding around in the trunk of a car.
Absolutely.
Do you think, Kent, that MTV made music better or not as good?
Do you want the PC answer?
Yeah, whatever. No, whatever you're comfortable with.
No, give me your real answer.
For me, my personal taste is that MTV was so about the visuals that the music suffered that you had to look good instead of sound good.
Yeah.
I agree.
Have we rebounded?
I would say in some ways, you know, certainly by the mid to late 90s, there was a great rebound with a lot of the alt bands like, you know, Garbage or Counting Crows or people like that. And I think that's continued. It's just not on such a mass scale. People don't know about it.
The book is called Goodnight LA, The Rise and Fall of Classic Rock. It's the untold story from inside the legendary recording studios. It's available everywhere or at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com. Tell us some of the fights that went on in the recording studios, because I bet there were a lot.
Yes, there were. Interestingly, you know, one of the more dramatic scenarios in the book, and I talk quite a bit about the band Chicago, which, of course, was from Chicago. And, you know, they were huge in the 70s, just a juggernaut. And, you know, they recorded quite a bit in L.A. And so, you know, the first bad thing that happened to them was that their lead guitarist, Terry Kath, accidentally killed himself. He shot himself in the head, if you might remember.
We talked to his daughter, remember, Bill?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Trying to keep his legacy alive.
Yeah. And so, but after that, Peter Cetera sort of took over the band and became the lead vocalist, much to the chagrin of the others in the band. That wasn't their vision for it going into the 80s. And so finally it got to the point where they were in their management office in L.A., and Peter wanted to put out a solo album, and he wanted to dictate when they would tour and when they wouldn't, and the other guys were really bristling at this, and so they gave him an ultimatum. They just said, either you do it the band way, or we get a new bass player, lead singer. And so when Peter stood up to leave, the trombonist for the band, James Panko, turned around and just slammed his fist into the wall, and the drywall just you know, spread everywhere, and everybody was shocked, and Peter got the message, but, you know, he ended up walking, so that was the end of it.
Kent, with these fights, you know, they're almost always creative differences. Don't you think it would serve a band well to designate one guy as the leader and let him make those decisions, or is that impossible?
Well, you know, they all want to operate as democracies, but it doesn't work very well. You really need, like you say, one or two maybe people who clearly are the leaders of the band. You need sort of a benevolent dictatorship. That's like with the Eagles. I talked extensively with Don Felder of the Eagles, and, you know, that was his issue, was that, you know, Glenn Frey and Don Henley ran everything, and Felder didn't feel like he had an equal voice.
It happens all the time, sure. I'm sure. Linda Ronstadt is featured. I absolutely adore her. What can you tell me about her?
She is so wonderful to talk to. I talked to her at length and just for hours, and just she tells stories. She's very thoughtful. She's highly intelligent. She reads all the time. And, you know, she told me many, many stories, particularly about, in the book, there's a great one about You're No Good, her big number one single, and how, you know, Andrew Gold, of all people, actually played almost all the instruments on that song and came up with that great Beatle-ish sort of outro in the song. And she just loved Andrew Gold.
Of all the people in the book, Kent, who is most like our typical rock star and who is least like our typical rock star?
I would say the most like the typical or the stereotypical rock star would be Rod Stewart.
Yeah,
the book.
I can see that.
And Rod Stewart, he actually throws a punch at a guy, so there's some more violence.
what caused the punch? What happened?
Well, his album, there's a world famous album cover designer in Los Angeles named Kosh. He just goes by one name, K-O-S-H.
Yeah.
And he designed Abbey Road and Hotel California and all this great stuff. Anyway, he was Rod's designer, and they were friends. And anyway, Rod didn't like the fact that Kosh didn't want to do this highly vulgar album cover that Rod wanted to do that I can't even tell you about on the radio.
Really?
But there's the story in the book about it, and Kosh has said, no way am I going to do that. And so Rod Stewart reared back and threw a roundhouse punch at him, and it was only stopped at the last second by this little record producer who just grabbed Stewart's arm at the last second. So it happened.
So Rod Stewart's the most atypical. Who is the least typical of the rock stars?
You know, I'd have to say Tom Scholz from the band Boston.
Yeah.
You know, yes, they were based in Boston, but they were signed to an L.A. record label. And Tom is a genius, and he was the mastermind behind that first Boston album in 76.
Which, by the way, may I just say, is on everyone's list, your top 10, if you're on a deserted island, that debut Boston album would definitely be on that list.
Is it on your list?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, good.
It wouldn't Mine be on too. Yours?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So nothing has ever sounded like it. And but Tom Scholz secretly recorded almost that entire album by himself in a crummy little apartment building basement room just filled with mice and spiders. But the record label didn't know it. The producer ran interference and told the label that, yeah, the band's recording it. But in fact, four members of the band were in L.A. in a studio pretending to record it.
Wow.
Tom was home doing the whole album himself.
Brilliant.
And Ann Wilson, of course, is featured from Heart. She and her sister Nancy are at odds right now, having a little bit of a fight. Were they together in the studio? Did they get in a fight?
No, they didn't. Actually, at the time, you know, they would, you know, squabble a little bit. But you know, they were recording in L.A. some of the time there, and they were pros. They were great. And the interesting thing about Ann Wilson is when she records, she does not just go into a vocal booth or stand at a microphone like you would expect in the studio. She's so used to being a stage animal that when she sings in the studio, she wants a handheld mic, and she prowls around the room and sings the song as if she's on stage.
Hmm. That is so cool. Well, she's getting into the feel. Absolutely.
Yep. Yeah.
All right. Kent Hartman is his name, best-selling author of Goodnight LA and also your earlier book, The Wrecking Crew. They're in stores now or at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com. I cannot wait to read this, and long live rock and roll.
Thank you very much.
Take care, Kent. Nice meeting you. Have a good weekend.
Thanks.
That's Kent Hartman. We'll take a quick break. We've got news next and then a lot more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.